Usually when we speak to Jim Heaney, investigative reporter, Investigative Post, founder and editor and executive director, he's by phone. Not today, though. No, today Jim Heaney sits right before me in the plywood hut. How are you, sir? He is the white-maned investigative lion.
White-maned. I'll take that as a compliment.
Oh, absolutely. You should see the people.
Is that a nice way of saying I'm old?
No,
it's a nice, saying, Susan?
A nice way of saying that you have a very good hairline.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
Take it as a compliment.
You know, my friends give me grief about my gray hair, and I say, I've got it.
Yeah.
I've got it.
You wouldn't believe the bald heads that come into this room.
Yeah.
So you wanted to share some of your thoughts about the lack of reform during this legislative session, and there were three opportunities for reform. There was economic development reform, which you've written about. There was ethics reform, which we've all talked about ad nauseum. And there was another kind of reform, voter reform. That also didn't go anywhere for whatever reason. What is the problem?
It's got to be in the water here. No, I mean, it is, and I'm really kind of zeroed in on the economic development.
Sure.
Although ethics all spills into that.
Yeah.
To me, it's stunning that this hasn't gotten traction. Now, clearly, the governor doesn't want this to happen, and clearly, either the legislature doesn't want it to happen, or they don't have the gumption to challenge the governor on this. But either way, I mean, is there a single member of the state legislature who has really taken a full run at this and done everything they could to try and advance reform?
Because certainly not in the majority. In the majority in each house, nobody has. In the minority houses, well, that's their job. They push the envelope and they have.
Yeah, I mean, and is it because they believe in reform, or is it good politics to be pressing for reform when the Democrats, or vice versa?
Right. I don't know.
Yeah, it's easy to challenge the status quo when you're not part of it.
Absolutely. And that's on ethics. Now, on voting reform, it doesn't seem to be a real obvious reason why the Republicans in the state Senate would be against broadening voter rights in New York. Do you have any sense of why that would be?
Nah, the whole voting issue is kind of outside of my scope.
Is that outside of your scope?
Yeah, I just...
I didn't think anything was outside
well,
of your
well,
scope.
Well, Republicans, though, I mean, when you look at things nationally, Republicans aren't really big on expanding the voter pool to be inclusive. So maybe that's just bleeding into what... I mean, I think state Republicans here, generally speaking, are a more moderate bunch than you'll find in a lot of parts of the country, the kind of Carl Paladino wing of the party notwithstanding. But I think maybe that's just part of the Republican Party's DNA these days.
They're looking at the demographic writing on the wall and seeing that their numbers are shrinking.
Yeah.
So why expand voter access?
Yeah. You know, going back to the economic development stuff, given the indictments, given the scandal, you would think that it would be in Andrew Cuomo's vested interest to be leading the charge on reform. Because when this trial goes down this fall in Manhattan involving Prococo and Todd Howe, et cetera, that could be potentially very, very damaging. Somebody earlier this week suggested to me it has potential to be Andrew Cuomo's Bridgegate. And you'd think that the governor would want to be out in front of this to push reform, to inoculate himself if the worst case a scenario unfolds during this trial. I don't know if he's just so unwilling to wield an inch when it comes to power, or to unwilling to acknowledge any kind of shortcomings in the way his administration has handled economic development money. But, you know, as a series we did with Columbia and ProPublica showed this spring, you know, the state has poured billions of dollars into economic development in upstate New York and has gotten, you know, job growth that is among the worst in the country during the Cuomo years. So, you know, state taxpayers are not getting a good return on their investment.
More than that, though, I think that your investigation also showed, Jim, that there isn't good oversight, and there certainly isn't really a good record of what's been happening.
Yeah. And
Bart Schwartz called it sloppy.
Yeah, and I think he was probably being generous in what he said. But, you know, beyond the return on investment, yeah, there needs to be transparency. There needs to be clean contracting. But, you know, the bill that Dinopoli had pushed, dead
clean
on arrival.
Clean contracting. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it would seem to be a no-brainer. I mean, it's almost like there's this corruption coalition at work here that is protecting corrupt practices.
A corruption coalition. Do you think this just involves the second floor, or is this also something that I mean, obviously the legislature is enabling it in some way, not pushing it.
The coalition, clearly the governor is leading the parade on this. How many members are there in the state legislature?
I don't know.
All right,
a lot,
well,
hundreds.
All right. Well, there is a coalition of hundreds, because I think every state legislator plus the governor is responsible for the state of affairs, and to me it's inexcusable. You've got programs that aren't delivering, that have not been reformed. You've got corrupt practices that that are not being reformed, How can this? I mean, it's happening because this is Albany.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I think the governor is making a calculation that what's going to happen in the trials in Manhattan in the fall are not going to hurt him. And he's looking forward. He doesn't want people looking over his shoulder. It's something that Michael Schneerson wrote about in his biography of Cuomo when he was at HUD. He didn't want the HUD controller looking over his shoulder. He doesn't want the current state controller doing that either. So he's making a calculation. I mean, it's a risk.
Yeah, you'd like to think that government's being run, the basis of government is being run by more than the guiding principle of political calculation.
Like, I think he wants to get stuff done, too.
Well, he does, but when you look at what's going on in economic development, you know, how's that working out? It's on the ethics end, it's not working out. On the deliverables, it's not working out. So it's time to, you know, I've yet to hear him, for example, Elaine Carlieros. What rings in my ears is the governor, I think maybe after the indictments, continuing to describe Carlieros as a near genius.
Tell us about why it is we don't see more investigative journalism like Investigative Post, because my sense is it's just expensive.
Well, yeah, it's not easy and it's not cheap. And we've talked about this before. Most quality investigative reporting on a local level is done by the daily newspaper. The daily newspaper business is tanking. As revenues shrink, expenses get cut.
Even the New York Times is cutting.
But, you know, the most expensive stuff tends to get cut. And investigative reporting is expensive. You're paying a reporter to spend weeks or months to produce a story or two. And often those stories make life at the country club a little uncomfortable for the publisher. And for all those reasons...
That image is perfect.
Yeah, but the reality is, you know, most newspaper editors and publishers are part of the...
establishment.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, now the really good publishers realize that it's their job to keep their nose out of the newsroom. And good editors realize it's their job to insulate their newsroom from pressures from the country club, and the good ones do it, and the not so good ones don't do it. But it's investigative report is expensive and it's uncomfortable, and for those reasons, you see less and less of it at regional newspapers around the country, and regional newspapers as opposed to TV, are continue to do most of that heavy lifting. So you've got government that needs more scrutiny receiving less scrutiny, and that's not healthy for democracy.
I was speaking with Dick Ravitch. We talked about the MTA on the air last week. He also, off the air, was bemoaning how a lot of investigative reporting has to have a bad guy or a woman. Sometimes it's just the system that's failing. Do you guys have anything on the horizon that will examine the system and, for example, a lack of investment?
Well, you know, we've last fall I heard reporter Daniela Porat, who came to us from the New York Times, and she's doing criminal justice. That was her interest. We had a mutual interest. And she's done some stuff on the Buffalo Police Department that we've talked about on air before. We're expanding the scope of her coverage to kind of cover the criminal justice system as a whole and trying to do some fundraising around it. And I got to tell you, I'm coming to the conclusion that of the many things that are kind of messed up in Western New York, the criminal justice system is maybe the most messed up.
Why do you say that?
All.
I think a lot of people would agree with you. I just want to know your reasons.
Well, it goes well beyond policing. As Daniela is doing her reporting, it just seems to, it strikes me that there's a lot of injustice, institutionalized injustice, yeah, and inequality, and the poor being punished proactively before determination of a trial or a plea. Just the way
and the criminalization of poverty.
Yeah, I think that's a good way.
We've been speaking with Jim Heaney. He is the founder, editor, and executive director of Investigative Post. You can read all of the stuff that Daniela Porat and all of his reporters write online at investigativepost.org. Jim, great to see you.
Great to see you, Susan.
In person yet?
Absolutely.